Hello, everyone, and welcome into episode 74 of the Stomp the Bus Show. I'm your host, Mark Harris, coming at you solo for this episode. Colton will miss next week's episode as well. Had some, the yearbook at his high school is just taking a lot longer than it was anticipated. So he'll be back later on, but we got plenty to talk about. whenever someone on the men's basketball team quits in between two games, I've never seen that before. But before we get to Jose Perez's departure, I would like to thank Tyler Paley for coming on the show, ASU men's hockey radio play-by-play voice. Great insight into the program. Really learned a lot, and you can see why there's just so much positive momentum with this program, with this team. And I'm really excited to see what they do next year in the NCHC. ASU hockey over the weekend actually split up in Anchorage to finish the season with 24 wins. So won't be making the tournament, but good building block to improve on next year. All right, let's get into men's basketball. Oh my gosh. I mean, what a tumultuous slash still saddeningly predictable weekend. I mean, it's not a surprise at all that they lose both games to the Los Angeles schools. They didn't play that bad in their 81-73 loss at USC, but USC's Boogie Ellis hit 6 three-pointers. He went 6 of 8 from deep. If a guy on a college team, if the opposing team has a guy that goes 6 of 8 from three, I mean, you're probably just going to lose, you know, most of the time. And that's what happened to ASU down in LA last Thursday night. And then 2 days later, they lose to UCLA 59-47, scored 16 points in the second half of that game, actually led a half. Not a good game, but honestly, what happened on the court is really irrelevant to what happened off the court, which was Jose Perez quitting the team on that Saturday and playing in a game in the Dominican Republic on that Sunday the 10th, it would have been. And it's kind of unprecedented because usually, you know, players take the professional opportunities once the season is, you know, actually done and not still going on Saturday, March 10th, the ASU basketball season. Was it the 10th? No, the 9th, Saturday, March 9th. That's the day it would have been. The date is irrelevant, but the regular season was still going on for ASU. Now, were they playing for anything? No. It might have been on a Friday. I don't even know. Because they played. My dates are all messed up. Oh my gosh. Well, it doesn't matter. The in between of the UCLA or the USC and UCLA games, he quit. It was unexpected. It did not seem. Yeah. Okay. So this would have actually been the March 8th. Was his last day with the program. But regardless, leaves the team out of the blue. And of course, they don't play well the next day. And, you know, that's not really a surprise. They probably weren't going to play well anyway. So I'm a little bit conflicted because on one hand, it's a dick move to quit on a team when the season isn't even over yet. And I know Hurley said on the radio today that it was a time-sensitive issue. I just don't buy that. I don't. Because guys play international basketball all the time after they finish their college careers. Why is it? He literally could have done it in a week. He literally had to wait like 5 days for this to happen. And so I don't understand why his contract was contingent on him joining the team for their game on March 10th. Getting these days correct. For their game on Sunday. And, I, you know, It was just explained on, when he quit, just as a, oh, he's leaving for overseas opportunities. I thought it would be actually over, an ocean somewhere in Europe or in Asia or whatever. No, it's in just over the Gulf, oversea, not overseas, oversea, one sea to the Dominican Republic. And you know what? He's making more money to play college basketball now. Still just a weird, it's such a weird, like, it's so weird. That's the thing. It's just so weird. And I don't even know if, like, you can extrapolate this Jose Perez leaving to, like, this is an indictment on ASU basketball. It's like, I don't know. I think this is much more about Jose Perez than it is about ASU basketball or Bobby Hurley or college basketball in general or college sports in general. All this, like, I think this is kind of a Jose Perez issue when you look at all the different stops he's made to Gardner Webb and Manhattan, and was at West Virginia for a year but didn't actually play. Now he's at ASU. It's still funny to me that he got honored on senior night for not even being at ASU for like 6 months in total. But hey, now he's playing in the Dominican Republic, and I mean, good for him, I guess. I'm not mad at him because there's nothing like this team isn't good enough to elicit anger from me about him quitting, but he did quit. Let's be clear about that. Like, he quit. Okay. And whatever, you sometimes it's you have to quit things in life. I get it, but I just don't buy that it's like, oh, he had to be there on March 10th. Otherwise, the opportunity wasn't going to be there. No, I don't buy that because that's literally like, when has that ever happened? ASU's had so many players go on and play international basketball professionally after they're done. I'm sure some guys on last year's team, a lot of them are playing, in different conferences, but Desmond Cambridge, I don't know what he's up to, but he might be doing that. Or like Alonzo Gaffney, I'm sure he will have opportunities to play professional basketball elsewhere, but he's still with the team. He's at least coming to play the games, So it's just weird. It's just a weird deal. I don't, and the fact that it was like on a road trip too, that's also very strange to me. I don't know why, like, why wouldn't you just take the opportunity the weekend before the LA road trip? I don't understand that. Like, the timing of it is so weird that it was Friday, March, and would have been the 8th because Saturday's the 9th. Yeah. I'm finally getting my dates correct because I've forgotten all day that today's Tuesday that I'm recording it. Anyway, so weird stuff, I could go into more about what happened on the court, but it was just, I mean, the end of that UCLA game was just so sad and unfortunately extremely on brand for what we've seen this entire season with ASU basketball. Like, the offense just isn't there and it can't be generated. It can't, there's no switch they can flip. It's just not happening. So, season is basically over. They play Utah on Wednesday in the Pac-12 tournament. They have beaten Utah twice this year and actually played very well in those games, scoring, they won 82 to 70 and then 85-77 in Salt Lake City. So from that perspective, sure, like, they could beat Utah. Do I think they're going to beat Utah on Wednesday? No, I don't. For one, it's hard for any college basketball team to beat a competent team, like, three times. And secondly, like, it's ASU. Like, this is the worst. I don't know if it's the worst ASU team I've seen. It's pretty close. And there's also not any, like, COVID excuses, for lack of a better word, which I don't know if excuses is actually the right word for it, but you get my point. There's no external reason factoring into why things might be going a little haywire. It's just not, things just haven't clicked all year. They didn't click from game one when they were on the Barstool broadcast, playing Mississippi State. And they haven't clicked at the end of the season either. So if they beat Utah, that would be great. I mean, I don't know. Then you can finish 15 and 18 instead of 14 and 18, I guess. You know, like, yeah, I'm moving on to the future of ASU basketball. And before we get to that, actually, I do want to shout out Frankie Collins. He was named to first team all defense for the Pac-12. Very deserved for that. He was also an honorable mention for all conference. Didn't make the first or second team. And there, I saw, you know, a few outlets, you know, kind of being upset that, like, why didn't he make the, or media members, I guess is a better way to say it. Like, why didn't he even get on second team? I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, did he really 100% deserve to be on second team? He's your leading point guard, and he shoots, you know, he scores 13.6 points per game. 3.3 assists per game, 42.9% from the floor, 30.7% from three. You know, like, what? That doesn't scream second team all Pac-12 to me. The 2.7 steals per game are nice, and that's why he's first team all defense, and deservedly so. You know, obviously broke the program single season steals record. Like, that is the silver lining of all silver linings to a season is his defensive play this year. But I'm sorry, it's not good enough to warrant being on the second team. I just, you know, it was Jermaine Cousinard from Oregon, Tristan Da Silva, no, Boogie Ellis, no, Pelle Larsen. Pelle Larsen probably deserves second team over Frankie this year. And then Maxime Reynaud from Stanford. I just can't really be that, can't really be that upset about it. I mean, Isaiah Collier from USC didn't make any of these teams, and he dominated ASU at the end of the game last Thursday, and he's going to be you know, a first round pick this upcoming NBA draft. So I don't have any problem with him not making second team all Pac-12. I just, this is a bad team, and he was the best player on this team, but it's not like he got snubbed here. Just let's just end with that narrative or argument. I mean, the team is 14 and 17 on the season. They're tied for the second to worst conference record in the Pac-12 at eight. What is it? 8-12. Waiting for ESPN to load here. Come on, let's go. Yep, tied with USC and Stanford at 8-12 overall. Thank you, Oregon State, for finishing 5-15 and 13-18 overall. My word, really disappointed that ASU lost to that team by double digits. It's just not really acceptable, but here we are with ASU. That's just kind of what happens. So yeah, just glad this season is over. And anyway, looking to the future, Bobby Hurley had his weekly interview with Bickley and Murata this Tuesday morning. And most of those interviews are pretty nondescript, and there's not really anything that comes out. One interesting thing came out on this Tuesday interview. And basically, he just mentioned that ASU has gotten more, or ASU basketball has more NIL to work with than it did last year, and that he also said that he was continuing to work to get more NIL, work to get more NIL funds, so guys can come back. And to me, that's really all that matters. Like, just be able to keep Frankie, Adam Miller, and Sean Phillips. Those are the big three you got to keep. And again, I know that Sean Phillips is not, like, hasn't been good this year, but 7 feet tall. There's clearly something to work with. He has played a bit better down the stretch. So like you kind of have to keep him. I don't want to bring in another 7-footer. And then you also have Akil Watson and Braylon Green, talented freshmen that you brought in. You'd love to keep those guys. And then if Jemiah Neal leave, you know, I mean, I would love to keep Jemiah Neal, but he put his name in the portal last year, came back. We'll see. If he leaves, I'm not gonna be that upset, but it also depends on who they bring in. And then you have guys like Brian Selebonge and Kamari Lands, who, if you can bring him back, you should bring him back. I've said all year, like, I don't think Kamari Lands is as bad as he's been this season, but I also don't think that he's like that great either. And then Selebonge, at least with him, you know, he serves a very specific role. He's gonna make the hustle plays. You know, he's the classic college basketball player where like he gets the rebound, misses the tip-in, gets the rebound again, misses the tip-in, and then maybe he makes it or maybe he gets fouled and then he hits one out of two free throws. He's one of those basketball players, but you know, you need that energy. He's made some winning plays, he'll dive on the floor, stuff like that. So you want to keep Selebonge. And yeah, I don't know. I'm glad that, and I guess the fact that he's indicating, you know, that he's getting more NIL to work with proves that he's returning. And I guess there was, you know, speculation that he would take the DePaul job. There's speculation that he would get fired. All this looks like he's returning. I do think that, like, for as bad and, you know, in the ditch of where ASU basketball is right now, I don't, it's probably still in a better place than DePaul. I mean, DePaul, like, ASU basketball is having a bad year. They finished 14-17. I think DePaul had like 3 wins this whole year, maybe like 4 wins, which is just insane. So I think he's like, okay, like ASU's in a bad spot, but I could get Frankie coming back. I could get Adam Miller coming back, potentially Jemiah Neal. So like there's just some hope for next year. If what he said about the NIL, getting more NIL funds than he had last year is true, then you can bring back a good chunk of guys. Frankie's had social posts on Twitter saying that, you know, oh, we'll in indicating that he'll return for next year. And keeping him is very important. For one, he's the point guard. Like, you want to have, you know, stability with your point guard and continuity and all that. And then secondly, and most importantly, he's your best player. From this team, he is your best player. You don't want him leaving. You just don't. I mean, just from a perception standpoint, health of the program standpoint, that would be bad for him to leave. So it's very good that Bobby is getting more NIL funds than he had last year. Just if you go into the Big 12 with some continuity, you add a few more pieces from the portal. Do I think that this team would win? Like, no. You're hoping for a season like last year, like 2023, where you barely make the tournament, but you still get in. You still win what 23 games they won last year. If you can win 20 games next year in the Big 12, you're probably gonna make the tournament. Like, the only positive of ASU going to the Big 12, and I think we go into the Big 12 as the worst program. Not one of the worst. I think the number one bottom, what would it be, the 16th best program in the Big 12? Historically, anyway, like the worst. But that doesn't mean they need to be the worst next year, right? And the way you can achieve that is you do decently in non-conference, which they did not do this year. It was a disaster of a non-conference slate. And it previewed everything for the rest of the year, save for that little blip. The only deviations from that were the little blip of a 4-0 start in Pac-12 play, which, you know, it was fun when it happened, but everyone knew that wasn't, you know, gonna last. And then when they beat Wazoo, that was a nice game. But anyway, You go into the Big 12, you have continuity with Collins and Miller and Phillips and the new freshman coming in, the freshman from this year that would have conceivably improved. And, you finish 7-13 in conference play or some, I don't know, like 8-12 in conference play. And you sneak in, you get in at like 20-13 or something. This is what teams in the Big Ten do all the time. It happens in the Big 12. In years past, it's happened in the ACC, SEC. Like sometimes these teams get in that don't have, that aren't like 22-9. They're 20-13 and they still get in because of the strength of schedule. ASU has not had that luxury at all in the Pac-12. And in fact, there's also all these landmines they have to navigate because there's just the Oregon States. If you lose to Oregon State, it's going to mess up your net ranking and all this. It's happening to Arizona. Arizona probably won't be a one seed in part. I mean, obviously losing to USC like they did last weekend, and they, 2 losses to Wazoo and all that. But one of the big reasons why is because they lost on the road to Oregon State to a quad three team, and that tanks, one aspect of their net rating. And you won't have to deal with that quite as much in the Big 12. Now, there will be teams that fall to the bottom, and ASU very well could be that team. I'm going in eyes wide open of the potential realities of playing in that conference. I was watching the Houston Kansas game over the weekend, and I tweeted out on my personal account, like, man, I just shudder to think of what's going to happen when ASU plays Houston next year. And I know there'll be different players, but man, that seems miserable. Just, I can already, there's no way that game's even close. The style of play, just everything. Like, I can see it a year in the future, in 2025, ASU getting boat raced by the Houston Cougars in Houston or in Tempe. Doesn't matter. Anyway, so I don't know. That's kind of my ASU basketball thoughts. It's just tough. It's a bad year, and all we can do is hope that the extra NIL funds that Bobby's getting and some continuity next year leads to, a better season. And I do think it's possible, but I mean, Bobby didn't do a good job this year. He just didn't. And so he'll be probably on the hot seat for a lot of next year, potentially. And so we'll see how it goes, but at least if you have some continuity, you're going in with a puncher's chance. And as we kind of wrap up this basketball conversation, I do think it's interesting that he was able to get more. And I think a big reason for that is because, remember, last year Ray Anderson was still the athletic director, and there were a lot of alumni withholding NIL donations because he was in place. Well, obviously Ray Anderson is gone. We saw what the added NIL contributions have done for the football team, at least through the transfer portal. And with basketball, last year, obviously with Ray Anderson in place, that probably prevented a significant, group of donors to be like, hey, Bobby, we like you, but I'm not donating with Ray involved. Well, now Ray's gone. That could be a reason that Hurley has been able to generate more NIL funds, or at least he says he has. So the transfer portal, following the end of the basketball season will be very interesting for ASU because Hurley's going to have to, he's going to go fishing for talent because he knows that if he has another season like he did last year, he's gone. And for all of, for Hurley's flaws and, issues, whatever, they're all real. But another thing that is real about him is that he really likes ASU and wants to win at ASU. And there is value in that just because, like I said, we're probably the worst program in the Big 12, just when it comes to history, facilities, tradition, NIL, like all these things. We probably are dead last in that. And so it helps to have someone who wants to win here and, is going, I don't want to say out of his way because it's kind of part of his job, but generating more funds for his team next year. So that's your hope. If Because there's a lot of ASU fans out there who probably aren't happy about Bobby most likely returning, and I can't really blame them. But the hope is, more continuity due to a little bit more NIL funds, and hopefully that can lead to a decent season. But yeah, weird last few days, and it's still crazy that a guy who was on the team from day one did not actually finish the team, and he wasn't kicked off. He just quit for another professional opportunity, but he still quit during the regular season. Unprecedented. So I guess good luck, Jose Perez. I don't know. We hardly knew ye. On to some other sports before we get into some interesting comments, I would say, from Michael Crow about the athletic director search. Men's swimming wins their second Pac-12 championship in a row. They are also ranked number one in the swimming poll. I put my phone down. I'm not going to look it up again, but in the coaches poll for college swimming, they are the number one ranked team. So that's all. I mean, super impressive. Bob Bowman has a ton of experience. He's been a great swim coach, and to win the Pac-12 2 years in a row and be number one, like, that's extremely impressive. So kudos to them. Same thing with wrestling. They won their fourth Pac-12 title in 5 years. I think going to the Big 12, that's a much more wrestling-centric conference. I know Iowa State has a big program, Oklahoma State, big wrestling schools. And for that program, for ASU to be strong in that, I think that's really good. And again, Zeke Jones, great wrestling coach. So good on them for that. The NCAA track indoor championships were this past weekend, and the men's 4x400 relay won the indoor championship. So another great outing for them. This was the quartet of Justin Robinson, Caleb Simpson, Jaden Davis, and Gamali Felix, our NCAA champions in the 4x400 relay, setting a school and facility record with a winning time of 3 minutes, 2 seconds, 3 minutes, 2.35 seconds. It's also the world leading indoor time and the collegiate lead this season. So, record setting from those four young men. That is so freaking fast. And to get the baton handle right too, no messing up in that. You like to see that. Something you don't like to see is ASU baseball losing 2-3 over the weekend to the Oregon Ducks. Had a chance to win the series. They won game one, 5-4. They were leading on March 9th, leading into the ninth inning, blow the lead, lose 4-6. And then on Sunday, they lose 5-8. They're beating New Mexico right now, but I don't know. They shouldn't have to beat New Mexico at this point in the season to get back to 8 to 500. They would be 8-8. So not a great start to the season. I mean, looks like the signs were there against Santa Clara in the first series of the year. And so hopefully the pitching gets better. I mean, the pitching was better, I guess, against Oregon, but not good enough when you blow a ninth inning lead and de facto blow the series. So not great. Some small ASU football news nuggets. The Pro Day is on Wednesday, the 13th. And, ASU only had one guy go to the combine, that being cornerback Roe Torrence. This will be a good opportunity for Torrence and then safety Chris Edmonds and defensive tackle Deshaun Mallory to kind of show their skills in a Pro Day. I was kind of surprised that Deshaun Mallory didn't get invited to the combine. He had a really good year this past year for ASU. And Chris Edmonds, I think he'll impress people at his pro day, and I think he'll at least get a camp invite. You can see with him just kind of the way he moves. his body type. Like, I could see him being in the NFL for not a long time, but for a little bit, because I think I think he's been a good player in his 2 years at ASU. So hopefully for, and there's other guys that'll be there too. And I think the specialists could actually have a pretty good, this will be a good day for them as well. Particularly kicker Dario Longhetto and long snapper Slater Zellers. I don't know how exactly they get judged at a pro day, but hopefully they do their craft well and make the most of it. So wishing all the best to the players at the ASU Pro Day. I know that Xavien Valade, he did well at the Pro Day last year too. He didn't go to the combine, and I think that got him a camp invite. So, maybe if you don't get invited to the combine, make the most of the opportunity in the Pro Day. I doubt all 32 NFL teams will have scouts there, but it only takes one, as they say. Interesting news from Sun Devil Source on Monday. Chris Cartman got an exclusive report that ASU Assistant Athletic Director Gene Boyd is retiring. When I first saw this, I thought, ooh, what's going on? Is this something about the new AD search? Is this something indicative of the NCAA investigation? It doesn't look like it. Based on the reporting, it was a lot more about the fact that Boyd, his wife had been, so he recently got married 2 years ago, and for most of that time, they were doing a long distance relationship with her living in Colorado. So it seems like it's much more about a personal situation, which is why he's leaving. And based on the comments, it seemed like Boyd had done a good job at the school. He did a lot with the academic stuff and getting the athletes to have good grades and stuff like that, which is very important. I know I've been critical of Michael Crow on that stuff in the past, just because he brings it up as like the first thing with the athletic department, when that should never be the first thing. But that said, it's still very impressive for ASU to be on the leading edge on that front. So wishing the best to Gene Boyd as he reportedly reunites with some of his family. So there's some news and notes. Now, speaking of Michael Crow, let's get into an interesting article that came out last week. It actually came out, it was either Monday or Tuesday of last week. Tuesday, March 5th. It was a week ago. And if we hadn't had Tyler on, I would have talked about this last week, but there's no, I mean, I wasn't going to, talk about this stuff when he was on the show, grill him about Michael Crow, because that's technically his, his an employer of his. So it was not appropriate, but everything in this article still stands. So long story short is, Michael Crow emailed unprompted, which is key. He unpromptedly emailed John Wilner, who's Wilner Hotline out of the San Jose Mercury News. He's kind of the number one Pac-12 news source guy. And this it was basically because Wilner had been critical of ASU's hiring process and the fact that the athletic director search is taking so long, especially in comparison to U of A, who hired Desiree Reed-Francois right away, despite having all these budget issues. So let's kind of dig into this article. Wilner, ASU President Michael Crow on his AD search strategy for athletics and the general state of the Sun Devils. Okay, I'm not going to read all of this. Arizona moves quickly. Meanwhile, Arizona State is taking this time. How much time? Well, Ray Anderson announces resignation in the middle of November. ASU has not named his successor. They don't know if you're close. Shows how the athletic departments operate differently. Meanwhile, Arizona State's Michael Crow has a reputation for being disengaged from athletics, as we wrote in an assessment of the two schools in January. Crow took exception to our conclusions in that column and in an email sent unsolicited to the hotline, said our analysis of ASU was, quote, isn't picking up on the why and the what of what we have been attempting to do. So let's dive into these quotes. Quotes from an email, I guess, is a better way. This just irks me. We are making some design changes and updating our models for operations and systems before we make a decision on a new AD. So it is for us a careful and deliberate process. What does that mean? That doesn't mean anything. We are making some design changes and updating our models for operations and systems before we make a decision on a new AD. I'm going to read that a third time. We are making some design changes and updating our models for operations and systems before we make a decision on a new AD. Okay. I mean, I did see a report from Cartman in the past week that this is due to the investigation and Jim Brund, the interim AD at ASU, kind of getting all their ducks in a row before they hire a permanent AD. That could be it. That sounds like it's it. I just wish there was more transparency on, hey, we're waiting for the NCAA investigation to wrap up and then we'll, you know, announce an AD and all this. And again, this is Brad Sesmat's website that I'm using because Wilner gets his articles published on there as well. You know, Sesmat is, you know, insinuated on his podcast that he's hearing about Michael Crow potentially retiring. So there's that as well. Let's go into more of these quotes. ASU's great community, blah, blah, blah. Okay, whatever. In his email, Crow noted that the Sun Devils have, quote, invested more than $500 million in our athletic facilities recently, started a few new sports, started breaking world records again in swimming. This is, okay. I could be reading too much into this. I will say that right now. But the fact that he has to go to, hey, we're doing super well in swimming. Why are you guys even mad at me? Why are you even upset about the state of our athletic program? Look at how well we're doing in swimming. Michael Crow, you have to understand that people, sports fans do not care about individual sports. They just don't. Not collegiately. And they don't care about individual swimming and for unless it's the Olympics. So that means they don't care. You can't just be like, oh, football program's a mess. Basketball program's a mess. Baseball program is underachieving. Women's basketball is a mess of a mess, even worse than anything I've mentioned. Softball program isn't as good as it used to be. Why are you even mad though? Like, what is there to be mad about? Because look at our swim team. Michael Crow, I went to the high school I went to, Stadium High School, Tacoma, Washington, my sophomore year. They won the Washington State Championship. It was cool, but you know what everyone would have rather had? It was way more fun when our basketball team was going to state. It was more fun when our football team was like, okay, the school I went to didn't have a good football team, but like when they were winning, you know, five games instead of two games, it was a lot more fun. Like people care about the big team sports. You just have to understand that. And so when you're like, oh, our swim team's excellent. It's like, yeah, that's great. Like it is good. Like I'm not saying the swim team should be bad. What I am saying is you can't just point to the swim team being good and be like, why are you guys even complaining? Because that's just not how sports fandom works. So, okay, let's dive down into this. Crow didn't arrest DFA specifically, shocker. In terms of competitive performance, Crow simply noted that the Sun Devils are, quote, doing well in a broad range of sports and still searching for the right combination in others. Okay, whatever. He did, however, emphasize that Arizona State performing in the top two or three Pac-12 schools academically for athletes. These are all good. I'm not saying that this is bad. Found a way for our students to be highly engaged as fans. I don't know if I believe that. Crow cannot swing and miss. The department needs a leader. Da-da-da. He offered the following as a way of illuminating his broad strategy. Can you build and maintain college sports as college sports, not professional sports at colleges? Can student athletes be treated better like other students and still be student athletes? Can student athletes have better life outcomes regardless of their incoming family circumstance? These last two, totally understand, on board. Look, man, it's not 1975 anymore. ASU might have to pay these guys. Like, it may have to be professional sports, whether you like it or not. Okay. This is just the way the ball is rolling. And a lot of people in his position don't like it. You know, Nick Saban whined about it today in Congress, and his athletic director did too. And it's just like, it only takes one or two court cases for all of a sudden, you know, they're professionals or whatever. So, like, this idea of, okay, we need to maintain it as college sports. What do you mean by that? Like, do you mean maintaining what like college sports used to be? Or do you mean it like maintaining them as like these are still college students at the end of the day? So how do we, you know, make their life better? Maybe, you know, maybe that's the right way to look at it. I don't know. But his track record of athletic decisions does not indicate that he's like, oh yeah, we're thinking forward. Like, where he was extremely late on NIL. Again, when Ray Anderson 2 years ago, I think it was February 22, goes on Arizona Sports and says, we are not doing NIL. He deserves a lot of the blame for saying that because ultimately you can't say that on the radio. But that had to have came down from Michael Crow. There's no way that Michael Crow wanted NIL because he doesn't think of college sports that way. He thinks of it like he's running a D3 school where it's like, or it was like it in the past. And it's like, dude, that's not what ASU is, you know? We're operating ASU athletics in a way where it's an integral part of the university, not an add-on, not an addendum, meaning what you call university subsidy is something to us that is no different than how we operate the rest of the university financially. Okay. ASU. A lot of this is just filler, honestly. The same community is awaiting the appointment of an athletic director as well. So I didn't take, there was nothing like that I saw in this that quelled my concerns, I would say. That's the key thing I take away from this as I kind of look through the whole article. And I know I think I know in my heart that like I am over exaggerating the swimming comment, but just it in his recent decisions. Remember, this is the guy who supported Larry Scott in 2019 when everyone knew the Pac-12 was really struggling. He was quoted in the Arizona Republic saying, these other schools, these other leagues are going to be wondering how the Pac-12 passed us. Well, now you're in the Big 12, buddy. And it's because of your lack of foresight. So I don't know. I still want, you know, I mean, none of this, they could still make a perfectly fine hire. I do agree that it's an attractive job. I do agree with that. And being in the Big 12, like at least we're in the Big 12. Like, I mean, I could not imagine being in this either Cal or Stanford or Oregon State or Washington State right now. Like, being in the Big 12 is huge from that sense because at least there's some level of stability, some level of credibility. And, you know, hopefully David Benedict, that's who I want, the guy from UConn, you know, knows how to facilitate. I'm not going to say build basketball cultures because like those were already there for the most part, but like help them be better. And I mean, they did a good job with the hiring of Jim Mora recently as well. So I don't know. That wasn't very, didn't inspire a lot of hope, but who knows? You know, could maybe they, it's just the fact that this is taking so long and there's no end in sight. There's no leaks. There's a lot, you know, there's industry publications that are talking about how they aren't taking the search seriously. And then you juxtapose it with Arizona hiring Desiree Reed Francois from the SEC in like 2 weeks. And yeah, there's going to be a lot of questions, Michael Crow. This is dragging out. Okay. It was literally last year. It was mid-November. So December, 3 months. It's been 4 months. 4 months. And it's not going to get thick. Like this, it's not going to end soon. Like there's no indication that there's going to be a hire in by the end of March. So, and likely by the end of April. So that it just keeps continuing. And again, if they hire the right person, ultimately it doesn't really matter how long it takes, but it just feels like this school, this administration of the school is extremely unserious about high-end college athletics and for the revenue sports. Okay. Key distinctions. And there was no mention of Desert Financial Arena, which I think is telling. Because there was a mention of it last year when he said the ASU wasn't going to go to the Big 12 to the state press. He thought the arena was completely functional. Again, I'm going to use that against him because that just it's just a window. It's just a window of how he views the revenue sports. Oh, they're functional. We have a football team. They play football games. We have a basketball team. They play games. You can go to the games and watch. We sell food at the games. Are the teams good? Do you actually like support them beyond that? Oh, they don't. Whatever. Just roll the ball out. So, all right. Well, I had to share my thoughts on that. Next episode will be sometime next week. There'll probably be something to talk about, but doesn't look like Hurley's going anywhere. For better or worse, and the AD search drags on. Hopefully, we'll be talking about a winning baseball series down in Tucson, although I can't say that I can predict that confidently. All right. Well, thank you for watching. Please like and subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, please rate and review on your podcast app of choice. And as always, go Devils.